You are listening to On the Shoulders of Dwarves, a weekly podcast about role-playing games and role-playing gamers.
On the Shoulders of Dwarves.
Hello and welcome to On the Shoulders of Dwarves, a weekly podcast about role-playing games and the people who play them. My name is Eran Aviram.
And my name is Uri Lifshitz. Hello!
And today we shall talk about creating a mysterious world, an atmosphere of mystery, keeping the players unsure, perhaps worried, perhaps...
curious?
Yes. Maybe it's just magical and wondrous and unclear. So this is a very GM-centric episode.
I want to start by discussing the nature of mystery. What is mystery and how to create it? And for that, I would like to quote, of all people, the United States Secretary of Defense, Donald Rumsfeld, who presented a very interesting concept called the known unknowns. Those things that we know, we do not know. There is obviously four basic permutations. There's the unknown knowns and unknowns, things that we don't even know that exist. Therefore, they are of no interest to us. And we have the known knowns, things that we know that we know. And we have the known unknowns, those things that we know we do not know. And those known unknowns, in my eyes, is what create a sense of mystery. Let me illustrate. If our adventuring party is about to descend into a dungeon, shall we say, and we know that that dungeon is full of monsters and presumably traps and various dangers. However, we do not know which monsters are there or what kind of traps. These are known unknowns. We know that there is something, but we don't know what. This is why when you have a map and some section of the map is missing and simply has an inscription, "Here be dragons," it creates mystery. Because you know there is something there. It is a map. There have to be something there. It's an ocean. It's an island. It's another continent. It is something. However, we do not know what it is. It is a known unknown and therefore mysterious. Now, these known unknowns can be in the grand scope of your campaign. For example, the continent of Zendrick in Eberron campaign setting is a faraway continent that most people know nothing of. The 13th god is a forbidden god that none speak of. Therefore, we do not know much about it. Bestel, that weird character, doesn't want to talk about his family. Why? We do not know. We know there is something there. As a GM, we want to create this sense of mystery because it allows us to add more and more to our campaign as we move along. Okay, that Here Be Dragon section? Well, fine, I need a grand temple of the serpent god. I'm gonna put it there. I have a handy and convenient location to add things later on without the need of retconning my map or changing the geography or putting everything underground. It also allows me as a GM to keep something up my sleeve or to postpone important decisions. Which god killed which demon? I don't know, it's a mystery. There are stories by the god worshipper claiming, of course the god killed the demon. Ha ha! And there are stories by the demon cult saying, no, our demon killed the god and took his place, etc., etc. I don't have to make that important decision of, is there a demon or is there a god behind this specific temple? I can postpone this and create a sense of mystery both for myself and for my players.
Now, we talked about this in our episode about mystery plots, number 37. We'll give a link in the show notes. But there we focused more about how to actually run a plot, a game in which things are unclear and you can change the facts if you need to make things awesome for the players. Here we'll be talking more, I think, about the atmosphere and generally speaking, how to create a world, the essence of which is forever unclear, regardless of what specific type of game you are playing.
Indeed, and we will be diving down into the session level. From a player perspective, a player thinks, what would be my obstacle? What lies behind the next door? How do I open this portal? What will spring this trap? Again, these could be mere questions or obstacle to overcome, but these could also be items of mystery. Because if this portal is supposed to be opened by some object placed inside it, which is roughly 30 centimeters by 30 centimeters by 30 centimeters, and probably red by all the red coloring around this niche, these are clues that create a sense of mystery that I, as a player, would have to later discover. But it already creates a known unknown. I know that something should be inside this niche. I know that it has red colors around it. I don't know what's the meaning of these clues.
Mm.
But before we dive down into the session and the room-by-room dungeon delving, let's look at the world for a minute. Eran?
Most of the things I have to say revolve around two philosophical concepts, so please, please bear with me while I explain them very shortly. Everything I have to say from this point forward relies on two philosophical concepts, ontology and epistemology. I will try to be very brief in describing them. Generally speaking, ontology is what actually exists, and epistemology is how we perceive what is actually existing. That is, they are not the same thing. It could be that there is actually a thing here, and my thoughts on what it is, what I think is here, is not exactly the same as what is actually here. We won't get into details because it doesn't matter. The important thing is, they are not the same thing. So, when you are GMing a game in which there are fictional facts, make sure that you don't exactly deliver them as is into the players. The most basic way to do this is to present sensory information and not facts. I'm doing air quotes. That is, when a player says that their character examines the room, explain what they see, what they touch, what they smell. Don't say there's a hidden door, for example, but you find a very thin slit between the floor and the wall. Let them understand that there's a hidden door there. It's a fact that there's a hidden door there. But don't just push that at them. Don't just point at a thing that is real, that in the fiction. Instead, always keep it, I don't know to say vague, it can be very specific, but in sensory language. Always use the way that they perceive. So everything that they get from you is filtered, and they know it. When a player hears from you about how this flower smells and how it feels, etc., once the player is used to having everything filtered through the perception, when they realize that you are not supplying them with facts, but with their epistemology, they will start to see the world, I think, in a different light. They will start to realize, even though you are there, the GM, who provides them with everything they need, they can never actually know what is actually going around. They will need to work hard to make sure that things are in the fictional world are as they think they might actually be.
Forget working hard. They're going to have to work rather than just get the answer ready-made from you.
Yes. Yes, and it's important to show that not only the player characters are in this situation, but everyone. Show that no NPC has absolute knowledge, that they have defects. Show that all they have is different perceptions, and so they can be wrong. Even the most powerful of dragons, even maybe even gods, or maybe not. Maybe gods are gods because they do have absolute knowledge. But everyone else, maybe, don't, and they only explain things from what they understand of the world. When the golden dragon tells you that you must go and free the kingdom from an evil usurper, he might be wrong. Maybe it's not an evil usurper. He does not have the absolute knowledge. He only has the rumors he heard. And if you question him about it, he might even say, well, actually, you know what? You're right. I'm not sure it's actually an evil usurper. I'm sure it's an usurper because technically he did kill the previous king. But now that I think about it, the previous king was kind of a bastard. And everyone is saying that this new guy is cruel, but not exactly evil. Well, you know what? Good point. Good point.
Which leads us back to the whole evil is something that's written down on your character sheet and not the point of view. But moving on.
So as we just saw, information is unreliable. And everything you hear from other people is fragmentary at best, colored by their own perception at worst. So it's important to also keep all inward information moving at the speed of slow. That is, if you want to know something, if you want to find out a detail, doesn't matter if it's some old book that you're looking for somewhere, or if it's current events that you want to know about some things that are happening in some other land, it will take time and effort to understand this. It will take some time and effort to even gain access to this information, and then when you have it, it's not true facts, it's just someone else's perception. When you read in a book about the ancient empires, you are only reading someone's narrative of those ancient empires. It's not actual facts, it's what that person thought about the facts of the time. Also, by keeping information moving very slowly, the players can never be sure what exactly is happening in the world around them more than like maybe a day's journey from where they're currently at, because there's no way to know. For example, maybe the country they just left, there was an usurpation there and the king died, killed by someone that took their place. And
Iran stopped killing kings and usurped them enough.
It could be that the players will be unaware of this. Unless they make efforts to, for example, plant some spies or informants that will send them information with pigeons or horses or whatever.
Crows are really hot right
crows
now.
Crows are the best, but not magic. Keep magical information, that's my next point, as vague as possible. Or maybe vague as possible is too harsh. Don't make it precise. So, for example, if I want to send information to someone, use Animal Messenger. That's an amazing spell. It's a very simple spell that allows you to say a message to a creature, and the creature, like a bunny, and then the bunny goes to the person you told them to go to and deliver that information. Did it work? Was the bunny maybe killed, usurped during the journey? Did the person that hear the bunny talk, did they understand what is going on? Will they reply? All of these questions are left unanswered, unlike the spell sending, which is very common in D&D 5, because it's basically sending someone an SMS message, an instant message. They immediately get it, they immediately respond. That leaves no room for mystery. You immediately know that they received it, you immediately receive an answer back, you can immediately understand what is going on, where the person is currently in, they can deliver you information, accurate information as far as they know, immediately. This is the modern world. The modern world is not very mysterious.
I'm somewhat disagreeing with you here, because I think that establishing a reliable line of communication leads to an even greater mystery when that line is disrupted. That's one way of using this.
I think it should be a fifth level spell. Exactly as is, 25 words or less. You send it to someone and you get it back, but as a fifth level spell, it's an effort, it's a powerful sort of magic, the sort of thing that will take some time to get to, and by the time you're there, you've had to make do with crows. Only crows. That was the only maybe animal messengers. Regarding spells, just one last thing. All spells that are all divination spells, all spells that are meant to provide you with information should be vague in some way. And I'm happy to say that generally speaking, in D&D at least, that is indeed the case. So in many, many cases, when you cast a spell about the future or trying to answer a question, you will get a vague answer. It can be something very simple like a yes, a no, a maybe, or what's the name of that spell where you can get a general glimpse of how things will turn out in the next half hour. Yes, now that's the one that you can cast, and then the GM tells you things will be good, things will be bad, or things will be both. And that's vague, that's mysterious, that's the known unknown. Finally, my last general point is about leaving some space open. If you only provide sensory information and not facts, then you allow the players to come to different conclusions and have different interpretations of what is going on. They can then maybe start thinking about different causes. These deaths were probably made by the Vampire Council. Wait, but maybe they were made by rabid werewolves. Both explanations fit the facts that we've discovered about the bodies, about the deaths. And that's important, because once the players are used to having more than one possible answer, they also realize It is also possible that none of the current answers are true. There is always the possibility that there's one more answer they haven't thought of. There's one more explanation that fits everything that they managed together, which is of course not everything, because when they studied the body, they didn't get all of the facts about the body. They got only several perceptions that they managed to roll, probably. And there is something there, or there might be something there, that is not a vampire and not a werewolf, and is the actual reason why these murders happened. That's of course great for mystery plots, but it's also great for everything else, because it always keeps them guessing. It always keeps them unsure about how real things are in the world. They should be somewhat sure.
Actually, if we fine-tune it a bit, we can say that the players are never certain that their explanation of what has happened in the world is the correct one. I mean, they know a murder took place. There is the body of the dead king. There is the bite marks and the claws. They know these, but they do not know for a fact that he was killed by vampires or that he was killed by werewolf or something else. People keep using the Sherlock Holmes quote of, if you eliminate the impossible, whatever remains, however improbable, is the truth. But people forget that just because something is the truth doesn't mean that it's the whole truth. In this case, the truth is that the king is dead.
Yes.
It may very well have been that the king contracted lycanthropy and committed suicide on a full moon night, for example. This would be an excellent solution, which I guess technically would say that he was murdered by a werewolf, but then again, not exactly what you had in mind.
Yes, the Sherlock Holmes quote is very, very bad. Don't use it, not in real life and not in your games.
I want to focus on something for a moment. In fiction, we can have absolute truth. And it is very tempting to have that one single absolute truth, because we as GMs know the reality. We know what happened. We know it absolutely. And that is something that can only happen within the confines of the game. And in reality, I think most people will agree that you cannot have such a thing. And we need to differentiate between what is true in the game world and what is it we're presenting to the players about the game world.
And now I want to talk a bit about mechanics. Because if you want to create an experience around the table, the mechanics should at least serve that experience. So, for example, let's say that you are fighting in a swamp and you are fighting some goblins and there's fog all around and you want this to be an awesome but kind of mysterious fight. They are fighting maybe strange goblins, and because of the heavy fog and muddy shoes and the yucky atmosphere, maybe it's harder to hit. Maybe it's harder to even know where the goblins are. The best way probably to keep things mysterious is to add a variable, something that keeps things unclear and less precise. For example, if one of the players wants to attack a goblin that they see in the mist, they roll for attack, and then instead of you saying, well, minus two because of dim light, you roll a d4 behind your screen, which is not something that I usually encourage people to do. I personally almost never play with a screen, but this is maybe a place where you can use it for great effect. And you subtract the number of the d4 from the result of their die. So they don't know what exactly they got. It's not either 16 or 2. It's somewhere around 16. And it's unclear to them exactly what. And you keep doing this for several rolls until maybe things are clear, until maybe someone takes a torch out, until maybe someone casts a gust spell that will move away the fog. Probably it's not fun for anyone if you just keep rolling d4s after every roll and compare and subtract, because, you know, math. But at least for some of the rolls, I think it's more interesting than just rolling perception and you saying, yes, you see them, no, you don't see them. Leaving a vague place where it's unclear if they succeeded or not, and using answers that are, because as we said, you want to give perceptions, answers that are always somewhere around the line of, there's a vague silhouette in the fog, of a goblin around there, and you point at someplace. Does that mean they succeeded in perception or failed in perception? I'm not sure, but I know what to do now. I'm not left hanging. There's a silhouette of a goblin. I'll go and try to probably to hit the goblin. Maybe it will actually be a log and I will break my sword against it. Maybe if I managed to roll perception, I would have seen that it's a log. But failing didn't leave me with anything. It still gave me something, but it was unclear. My next point is about, generally speaking, rolling for knowledge. Any roll for knowledge. If you want, as a player, to try and achieve more information about the world, a lot of the time you will roll for perception, but some of the time you will say, maybe I already know this, maybe my characters know this thing, and you roll for a knowledge skill of some sort. It's important, as a GM, to make sure that rolls don't provide answers. As we said before, the fictional facts are never within the player's reach, only their perception. So, the rolls don't provide answers, they provide clues. They provide details, stuff that the player can then use to come up with their own explanation of what is happening. This happens a lot in City of Mist, and we also talked about this in the episode that we did about mystery plots. So we send you at those directions. Full disclosure, I'm the editor for City of Mist. And just to be clear, that's how investigation works in City of Mist. When you roll for the move investigate, you only get clues. You can use these clues to ask questions, but you have to come up with the questions. And the GM does not have to answer them directly. They can give you half-truths. They can't deceive you, but they are allowed not to simply provide you with the answer.
Then again, to be fair, that's also how investigation works in real life.
Exactly. Exactly. Finally, regarding mechanics, to keep things mysterious, make them less clear mechanic-wise to the players. So if you use goblins, well, players that fought against goblins already know most of the abilities that a goblin can use. For example, if I remember correctly, as a bonus action, they can disengage and dash and do all sorts of cool things. Great, that means that fighting a goblin becomes a tactical sort of a challenge and there's no mystery left. But what if these goblins have no eyes? None of them. Or what if these goblins... keep all of them, for some reason, use two daggers shaped as biting snakes? Or what if all of the goblins has completely whitewashed faces, like with some sort of acidic liquid that is burning off their faces, and they keep chanting something? In these cases, it's quite clear that these are not regular goblins, and something else is going on. And now it's important to try and understand what. Maybe roll some knowledge rolls and get some clues. Maybe try to fight them a bit and see what happens. You need to investigate the mystery in some way.
I had a very roundabout way of doing just that in a session I ran about a month ago. For some reason, and I don't want to get into this, I only had one page with one stats block on it, and it was for an orc. And that's all the stats I had, and I had no access to any other stat block. So basically, all the creatures met during that session had the same stat block, that of an orc. And I just had to get really creative with how I describe what happened and how the monsters seem in order for them to be not orcs.
So what we're saying to the GM here is use unique monsters or use interesting templates. That is, take a regular monster and change them in some way that they are no longer obviously the same way as before. By the way, it could be that the goblins that have white on their faces and they keep chanting something are not mechanically different from regular goblins. It could be a cultural strange sort of thing, a ritual they're doing or whatever, that has no effect on what is actually being rolled around the table. It doesn't actually matter because the players will not know that. And they might never realize this. They might defeat all of the goblins, continue on, and always wonder what just happened and what did they miss. That's great. That's fine. Don't give the facts. Give only perceptions. After everything we've just said, Uri, there's one just last thing to do. Let's summarize.
Whew! How to summarize such a big, mysterious subject? Well, I would have to say to all our listeners, remember, you, the GM, are the conduit through which the players understand how their character perceives the world around them. And you should only tell them what their characters perceive, not what is true or false about the world around them.
Indeed, but what is true, objectively true, absolutely true, 100%, is that it's time to take the load off.
This world is carried on the shoulders of dwarves.
This is the part of the show in which we talk about role-playing games in our own personal lives. Uri, how about you continue? It's your thing, do your thing.
Thank you, Eran. I feel great because just last night I had a session cancelled, but it was immediately replaced by a different session.
Hey.
Yeah, I love it when a plan comes together. I ran a test play for a new / old adventure, which I'm working on. It's an adventure I think I wrote 15 years ago. It's a comedy adventure, and I'm trying to make it relevant for today and not for 15 years ago today. It's called A Short Standard Classical Adventure. And as you can understand from the title, it is not. And I really hope to get it up and running. The test play was awesome, and I got a huge amount of feedback, which is the best kind of test play. Lucky for me, I had really talented players who really understand role-playing and made even the stuff that didn't quite click together, made it work. We had a lot of fun and an excellent experience.
I did not get to play anything. I'm in a, yes. It's the holidays are strangely a time where I don't get to play a lot. I will play quite soon Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay 4th edition. I really, really like 3rd edition. One of the best campaigns in my life was in 3rd edition, and I'll get to play some 4th edition soon. I will try out the starter box, which is, it's so good. It's such a great product. As a product, as a starter box for anyone, so good. I can't recommend it enough. If you want to buy something good for anyone this Christmas, buy them a Warhammer Fantasy 4th edition starter set box. But that's not what I wanted to talk about. I recently asked in our Facebook group and on the Twitters, what sort of cool scenes that you usually get to see in movies and TV shows you would like to see in games, but you don't get to see in games.
Coughing mechanics.
This can be because the rules don't allow it, or it could be because the players just don't do it. Like, for example, in D&D, fights always end when the enemy is defeated by reducing the hit points to zero. That's just how things are. It can be that you will retreat. It is possible that you will choose to try and have all sorts of cool conversations during combat and eventually convince them to stop fighting. But that won't probably happen, because the way to beat your enemy in D&D is to get their number of hit points from whatever it is to zero. And you do it by rolling an attack roll. That's just how things are because of the mechanics. And therefore, that's what players actually do around the table, even if sometimes it would be cool to do different things. So I want some answers to these questions. I want to know what cool scenes that you see in movies and TV you don't get to see in your games. Things that you want to see in your games, that you think, I would love to have a game that allows me to do this, that allows me to finish off a fight with both sides retreating because they've taken too many losses and they're hurt, and that's just what happens. It's a cool thing that happens sometimes in some cool movies, but it never happens in my game. I want a game that allows me to do this. And the reason I ask you this, and the reason I'm very happy with the many, many answers I got on my profile page, is I think maybe the RPG I'm currently developing can answer many of these open questions. I think that a lot of these situations can happen in the RPG I'm developing, and I'm asking because I want to test the RPG against these suggestions. I want to see if I manage to create something that can create these awesome, awesome moments that really we barely ever see. So please go to Facebook, On the Shoulders of Dwarves, a weekly podcast for role-playing games. You can go to our page, you can go to our Facebook group, you can go to our Twitter, you can directly at NNESK which is me, and tell me whatever you think about these sort of things. You can tell us what you think about whatever if you email show@dwarfcast.net. If you have questions about things that we've discussed or suggestions for things that we should discuss. If you have questions from your own table, some sort of situation you find yourself as a GM or as a player that you are unsure what to do about regarding other players, regarding your character, regarding the game, whatever, even regarding a product that you want to buy or develop, send us an email, show@dwarfcast.net, and we would love to answer you, perhaps in the form of an episode to come in the future. This is it. We have nothing else to say, and therefore...
Later on!
On the Shoulders of Dwarves is shared under Creative Commons by attribution and non-commercial 4. Intro and outro are by The Cliché Duo, and you can email us at show@dwarfcast.net.
On the Shoulders of Dwarves.
So, Uri, what is this adventure escaping Thelamus's lab that I've been hearing so much about?
Escaping Thelamus's lab is a D&D adventure for D&D 5th edition in which you have completed your quest and now have to find your way out of the dungeon in which you find yourself in.
Escaping Thelamus's lab is available through DriveThruRPG.